Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, race fans. Welcome to another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. Glad to be here on this Thursday night. Glad to be able to say, hey, Chris, I told you so. Yes, Chris, we'll come on and we're going to have a nice, interesting conversation about the 88 car and next year's plan. But before we get into that, make sure you guys check us out on Twitter, @110Nation. Check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. Also, got to thank Fit for Life, H. Dale of It Works, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio. Without these great marketing partners and networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow. So I got to make sure I thank each and every last one of them. I'm just your co-host, as always, your host, Chris, Yellow Sasha, Flag Creighton. Here right now in the studio, we'll be joined by Craig Moore here just in a few minutes. But Tom, let's go ahead and get you hosted. Chris, how you doing tonight?
Howdy, howdy, howdy. How the hell are you?
Doing great.
Haha, you mean you can actually hear me?
Oh, I can hear you. You hear you just
loud
fine.
Loud and clear. So, race fans, this is where Mr. CJ Sports gets to sit back in the chair with a big old cigar puffing out of his mouth and say, oh, I told you so. Big Daddy, you had me this time. But you know what? It's really just the first domino that's going to fall of many, Mr. CJ Sports. And I will give you my take. I was all for Larson at first. You know, Larson's going to be the guy. You know, well, you know, I was wrong. Well, then Kenseth looked like a good idea. You know, well, I'm not going to give up just yet on Kenseth to Hendrick Motorsports. There's always some interlining truth in everything that we've ever heard. And Kenseth may still be a candidate for the 5 car, which I think would be a good position for Matt to do. And speculation, I'm hearing that maybe Casey Kane and 5 Hour Energy are going to hook up and go over to the 77 car. So that's just a little bit of what we're going to talk about tonight. Of course, the dirt race at Eldora was last night. My gosh, I had some friends of mine in the dirt world. Man, they wrote Christopher Bell off just a little bit too quick. Bell, of course, didn't win the night, but he was probably the strongest truck there. And I come back from a lap down, which, you know, race fans, if you follow dirt, it's hard to get your lap back in dirt racing. But with NASCAR's rules and the lucky dog, he went a lap down. He was able to get his lap back. So Bell actually raced his way back through the field. Got into an incident there near about the halfway mark, a little bit closer to the end, and, of course, his night was over with. Along with, I believe, Kaz Garla, right? Right, Mr. CJ Sports?
Yeah.
Tough break for Kaz Garla. And I tell you, I'm keeping my eye on Kaz, and he was doing a great job keeping out of trouble. That wasn't his fault. It was the truck slid up in the middle of the lane, of course, as most of us seen, and Kaz had nowhere to go. So it wasn't his fault. Unfortunate short night for him. But how about Matt Crafton grabbing that top shelf up there and rolling that thing in? My goodness gracious. I wish I'd have had a camera on the back of that tailgate, kind of leaned out a little bit closer to the wall there so we could have had some good image. Speaking of video cameras, how about the Chase Briscoe helmet cam? My goodness gracious, that was a sight to see. We've seen it on Danica. But to watch it in that dirt car, man, that in the dirt truck, that was something. That was beyond entertaining. It was the most awesome view I'd ever seen from inside a cockpit of a car. Mr. CJ Sports, what's your take on that?
You know, last night was the first time I actually got to sit down and watch Eldora. I had something come up. I ended up catching late as the first stage ended. But it was my first experience of watching Eldora. It was definitely a fun race to watch. I tell you what, I was starting to wonder whether or not Chris Bell was going to pull that out. I got to the point where I was really cheering him on, and I thought he was going to be able to do it. Big shout-out to Ben Rhodes. I know his night didn't end the way he wanted it either. We've had him on the network as well. Great guy. There's a couple other drivers out there we've had on the network. I was out there pulling for it. But all in all, it was a very enjoyable race. I had a blast. Josh Rollo's another one that's been on the network a couple times. I had a blast last night watching that race.
Sorry about that, yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, I was kind of away from the microphone there. So if you ask me a question, I think I missed it. But it's been an entertaining race. It's definitely something that has improved the viewership. I'm not sure what the take was with going to Fox Business.
FIFA qualifiers or whatnot was going on, and I'm assuming that they didn't know that when they scheduled the race, but that's why it was moved, was the FIFA, the Soccer World Cup qualifying stuff was going on. Did I lose you? Anybody?
Mr. CJ Sports, sorry about that. I'm having some connection issues with this phone, so I switched it over to my backup phone. So we, once again, are visited by technical difficulties, but this one is not going to be too hard to handle.
Did
the stage racing worked. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you hear the explanation of why I went to Fox Sports or Fox Business?
No, I didn't. I'd love to hear that.
The FIFA World Cup qualifying was going on. It was on FS1. That's why it got moved to Fox Business, because Fox already had obligations to televise the FIFA World Cup qualifying stuff.
Okay. Well, you know, and that's I'm sure what they got last night was a good dose of their ratings because, of course, Fox Business is probably not the most watched channel. So I think that if Nielsen did a check last night, their ratings on Fox Business probably were skyrocketing. At least it was a bunch of Republicans over there anyway. But not that that matters. Anyway, there's just a lot going on in the season right now. And we've gotten through the dirt race, and I give Fox Business a credit. It was a very good race. And I would like to see this event grow. Mr. CJ Sports, can you hold the mic for just a minute?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how much more Mr. Yellow Cross Flag went to the grow. Like, it was record attendance. I'm curious to know what those more grandstands. But I'll tell you what, while I got an opportunity, big shout out to Tony Stewart. I don't know if the listeners out there had all gotten an opportunity to see pricing and stuff. We talked about this on the One Fin Nation Sports Show earlier this week, but Eldora, the price of a beer was $2. Our local track here, the Fayetteville Motor Speedway, Dublin Motor Speedway, you're paying $5 or $6 a beer. You go to a NASCAR event, you're paying $8 to $10 a beer. $2 a beer, a whole pizza, $14. Not only. Has Tony Stewart done a terrific job with the track, but he's done a terrific job of making it affordable for the fans and affordable for the whole family to come out. But when I see six packs for $10, I work at a Circle K. I run a Circle K. And I got six packs of my store that are not. So the prices, now they even sold mixed drinks for $4 and shots for $3. I didn't catch that at first until I read a comment underneath somebody taking a picture of the sign, and then right in the middle underneath the Coke logo, in between the two Coke logos, it has mixed drinks and shots and prices for that. I was like, oh, snap. I can imagine what it was like to be out there at Eldora. But, big shout-out to Tony Stewart and what he's been able to do, taking a dirt track in Nowhere, Ohio, and I can say that I'm from Ohio, take a dirt track from Nowhere, Ohio, and put on a sellout event on a Wednesday night on national TV, and such a big deal that Fox Business had to give up their program to make room. That's how important this race was to the racing community and the sports fans out there. But to make it affordable, as Tony Stewart makes it, with the cheap prices, and like I said, we compare prices to Fayetteville Motor Speedway in Dublin, our local track, that have, you know, the biggest thing we got going on is the Carolina Clash. We're paying $5-$6 a beer. Mike on with me on 110 Nation Sports Show talking about $5-$6 a beer at Riverhead, and to see the prices at Eldora and know that it's $2 a beer or
six pack for $10. I tell you what, big shout out to Tony Stewart.
Most definitely, Mr. CJ Sports. Most definitely. If it works there, it can work in other places. And I think that's kind of what Tony's able to do right now. Kind of set the gold standard.
I'm curious, Chris. Yeah. How much is a beer at Why Not or at Hattiesburg?
Well, Hattiesburg is a alcohol-free facility. But I believe a beer at Why Not is going to run you about $4 for a 12-ounce Coors Light can. But now you're also able to bring it into the Speedway. I don't know what policy that is with Eldora. Uh-huh. But you know, a lot of these tracks allow you to bring your own cooler in, and even Talladega allows you to bring your cooler in up to certain specifications. But now, if you're telling me that I'm going to go to a dirt track and pay $2 for a hot dog, the prices there makes you want to just say, okay, I'm not going to eat and I'm not going to drag this cooler. I'm going to spend money at the racetrack. That's a whole new revenue source, and I promise you, Mr. CJ Sports, that's a whole nother level of show. When you really start sitting down and looking at the economics of things, they would sell more food if it was more affordable, right or wrong?
Yeah. They would. I have not understood why NASCAR and these other venues overcharge. You bring down some of the pricing on the tickets, some of the pricing on the food. People are going to spend the money. We all go to the racetrack saying, okay, this is what I got. I got $200. We're going to, and when we say that, we're going to spend the $200. We're going to get close as we can anyway. Maybe a little bit left to get gas money on the way home. So if you bring down the prices, we're more willing to spend and come back so we can spend that kind of money and the whole family have a good time. Instead of we walk in with $200, we all might get in. One of us might get a shirt and a couple of us might get to eat. That's all you get for $200. So, I mean,
those
stores got figured out.
CJ Sports, what I found in the entertainment business is if you don't – a man will spend more money when he doesn't realize he's spending money than when he knows he's spending money. And you got to think about it. These people know when they're going to this racetrack, everything's expensive. But if you have something cheap, you'll wind up getting that customer to spend more money because they didn't realize how much money they spent until they got home because they were having such a good time. It doesn't work that way when your hamburgers are $8 at a local track, or not at a local track, but at a NASCAR track. Our hamburgers are around $4. You go to McDonald's now, and of course, Big Mac's like $6. So, it's life is expensive, and we're not gonna deny that fact. And I understand a lot of these Bojangles and stuff like that. They have private contracts. Papa John's. They have contracts with these tracks. And, of course, it costs a lot of money to hire the people to go do these events. But, when you start looking at the full spectrum of this is what it cost and this is what, that you got so many reasons why racing is at the pinpoint that it's at now. And a lot of it is because of the overcharging and people just really don't have that type of expendable income anymore. It used to be it was a lot cheaper to get through life. You was able to save a little bit. I don't know anybody my age that's in a medium to middle class pocket range that has expendable income or is able to save money for later on. It's and we have to look at that with the way the fans react to it as well. I believe wholeheartedly that if NASCAR would have to go in the smaller series to some of these, more local tracks like Eldora, you wouldn't have any problem making profit off of your hot dogs and hamburgers. Now, one thing I did notice about the menu that they showed there, they didn't have the price of a hamburger, but supposedly that was the back concession stand, and they actually have hamburgers at the front concession stand. But all in all, what a great point to bring out of how affordable it seemed to be to go to Eldora. Now, I want to know how much the tickets were. Do we have anybody that can send us how much the tickets were?
I'll see if I can see that. I was still more stuck on the fact that they had mixed drinks and shots. I thought that was very entertaining.
Yeah, definitely. And now it feels like NASCAR when you get mixed drinks. I promise you, there's nothing like having a mixed drink at a NASCAR race. Let's see where Craig is. Is Craig on yet?
No.
Well, my goodness gracious. Maybe he's somewhere in the backdrop there. Press one if you're there, Craig. But so Dale Doris, you know, I believe that this is the third year we need to open up the door to allow maybe the nationwide, give them a couple of years to get a car prepared. Let's see a dual night event. You know, they had the modifiers there last night. But.
This is really, and I mean to cut you off, this is really a shame. This should make a lot of even your local tracks really wake up. Well, that's not last night's event, though. I don't know if it's going to show last night's ticket price. I can tell you next, in 2 weeks, they got an event coming up, and $22 admission, that's something different. Though. Hold on, I'll keep looking. Go ahead, keep going. That's not what I wanted.
Yeah. But like I said, they're kind of setting the standard, Eldora is, of how to bring this new style of racing to the forefront. And it's very exciting. We'll spend a whole year talking about the next one and talking about the one that we just seen. It's great for the sport. It was really awesome hearing the announcers, which are normally, you know, a disaster, to hear the broadcast team using dirt track analogy, slide jobs, bump and runs, and stuff like that. You know, some of that's used as well in cup racing, but, you know, up on the top shelf and fell back, went to the back like a rock. I love that one. That was one of the little sayings by one of the announcers last night, but you know, I think it stirs the fan base, it gets them pumped up, and it'll help ratings for this weekend because, you know, it's exposure, NASCAR's a franchise, it's well known, and so there'll be, you know, the dirt fans will be paying attention this week. And I've noticed a lot of dirt fans are paying a little bit more attention to NASCAR. You just replace stage racing with heat races, and I think everybody kind of gets the picture. And I really think that that's kind of the new draw back to from the old fans is all this crossbreed, you know, this dirt track at Eldora with the truck racing. Now we do stage racing, we do knockout qualifying. It seems to be that we're getting that perfect medium, and NASCAR's showing love to dirt track fans. So please embrace it, guys. Embrace it, because NASCAR knows that it's the dirt track fans and the short track fans that give them what they need to survive as a major series, as a major sporting event. Because without every short track fan and dirt track fan, you won't have that many people showing up to a major speedway and not getting paid for it. But, you know, we'll bring Craig on. Craig said he's back there in the backdrop somewhere.
Yeah,
I am,
I'm
buddy.
Looking at stuff. There you go.
Right. How you doing, Mr. Craig Moore from New York?
Good, buddy. I apologize. I couldn't be with you at the start, but, you know, I work for the man now, and he required me to be there until a little bit after 9. But what did you think of Stuart Friesen, as they said over and over last night?
The kid showed that he belonged there. And I was pulling for him. He got outrun. But just to have a local hero guy like that and to be able to step up and run up front, man, I mean, how did that feel, man? That was pretty awesome.
I loved it. And we have a lot of our regulars went out to Eldora to run that modified. But I caught the beginning of what you guys were talking about when I jumped in the truck. And I agree with you, Chris. I think they should call that – I think they should do heat races. Even in normal Monster Energy Cup, NASCAR, or whatever you want to call it. But I think it's a lot more – I think it would be a lot more exciting than the stage racing they're doing.
Yeah. Just imagine that, man.
I mean, it was.
And the thing is about, and the thing about state, about heat races is, you race with your group. There's going to be the fast guys, and then there's going to be the other guys. At least in heat racing, you get to race your group of guys. And when you do, you're always going to have a winner out of that.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think that that's what really draws the interest in dirt racing is the heat racing. And, you know, it leads up to, it, of course, it leads up to the feature race. But there, right, there could still be some tweaking done in that. How about
hey,
some big
Chris?
News today? Let's go
Chris?
On into the Alex Bowman.
Chris,
out of nowhere this morning, we were
hold
shocked.
On. Hold on, Chris.
Huh?
I got your answers for you.
Okay, great. Now, the answers to how much the race was.
You had two questions. One, you didn't know whether or not you were allowed to bring coolers in or not at Eldora. You were allowed to. It can't be more bigger than 14 by 14 by 14. And the other question was ticket prices. 13 and up, general admission was $36. 12 and under are free. And it says, I don't know what reserve means, because reserve is more expensive. I would think it would be the other way around. But anyway, $36 for 13 and up, 12 and under was free.
$36 to go see the coolest race you'll ever watch. That is amazing.
Yeah. You know, I really, you're getting, we're talking about the truck series and all, but I'm looking forward to the when they do that Roval next season.
Mm-hmm. And Charlotte?
Yes. I'm looking forward to that. I think they should put one dirt race with an energy monster cup on.
Quit being me.
Not necessarily in the chase, but somewhere in the schedule.
Right.
And you want to draw fans. I was looking at the seats from New Hampshire last week. It was atrocious. It was atrocious.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe the number of seats that were empty.
Yeah. I think that's the main reason why New Hampshire's losing a date, too. I really do. It's a great track, but the attendance there is bottomed out, and I don't know if it has to do with Dover and a lot of the other northern tracks there together or what. But you know, it just seemed like New Hampshire kind of got left out when it comes to season ticket sales.
I was going to go actually. I could have gotten two tickets to go Sunday, but I already had promised my 12-year-old that we would go to the dirt track here. And promised the team that I sponsored that we would be there, and I didn't want to let the 12-year-old down.
Oh, no doubt, most definitely.
But,
always take care of those kids first. Well, I think the attendance issue is not something that's you know dedicated to just one track. Every track seems to be having problems.
No, absolutely. Bristol is the same way. I mean, Bristol is the same way. You used to wait for months, if not years, to get a ticket to Bristol, and now you can pretty much get a ticket on the day of. And that's bad. But that race last night, there was caution after caution after caution. When you didn't think there was going to be one, you didn't want to get up. You wanted to have Mama get you a beer or something because you didn't
want to miss anything. Five wide, man. Five wide coming out of two. Can you imagine
that?
Five wide. I mean, it was beautiful. It was a great race. And, you know, for Mr. CJ Sports to give us the ticket prices and all, I tell you what, that's probably one of the most affordable races to go and see. Take the family. If the kids are 12 and under, they'll get in for free. So you and Mama just buy you a ticket and take everybody up there and support that track every year when that race comes around.
So it's not even that far.
5 hours. Yeah. Well, I think it's about 12 to 14 hours from here. But it's definitely on my bucket list to go up to Eldora, at least maybe for the dirt race, if not for the truck race. So if you're out around that area, make sure you go support that track. Silly season, guys. Silly season. You know, we got surprised early this morning. Alex Bowman, by no surprise, has been announced as the driver for the 88 car. Let's hear some pros and cons. We'll start out with you, Craig. What's some pros and cons about bringing in Alex Bowman?
You know what? He's young. He's what the sponsors want. They want somebody young. Yes, Matt Kenseth's going to come over, like we spoke about last week. But I don't think it was in the program, even though Junior kept alluding to he's going to be somewhere. You're going to see him somewhere. I guarantee it. I think it's a great move for Hendrick. You've got two young guns in there, Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman. You've got a seasoned veteran like Jimmy Johnson. I don't know what's happening with Kane. I haven't heard anything or said anything, but you know, it was pretty much quiet after Kansas lost his ride with Alex Bowman, and we had discussed that last week, that it was pretty much quiet. The cons to it is he's young. He's going to have a learning curve. And if they think they're struggling now, they're going to struggle a little bit with him next year. But I think by the time we get to Daytona, I think he'll be in the top 20, knocking on the top 16. He'll lean on Jimmy and Casey if Casey's still there.
Watching Eric Jones' progression has really kind of given us a feel of how Alex should progress. Especially if he's full of talent. Now, Mr. CJ Sports, do you think that Greg Ives will stay as the crew chief of the 88 since he was the crew chief while Alex Bowman filled in? And what's the pros and cons of Alex Bowman to the 88?
I would like to think he would. You know, when Alex Bowman went nowhere in this offseason, when we found out Junior was retiring, that was my pick, that it made no sense to him to go nowhere and form the way he did and the opportunity he got, and nobody signed it. It just didn't make sense. I would like to think that the crew chief's going to stay there. Pros to me is you got a young driver. You got a driver that is patient, a driver that is wanting to be part of this organization. He, you know, I'm sure he was probably offered an opportunity somewhere. Said, you know what, I know where my opportunity is going to be at. Let me stay here. Let me be patient. Let me, kind of like Aaron Rodgers waiting out Brett Favre and passing him the torch. But also, we saw Alex Bowman take care of the car. I think that is very important to Hendrick Motorsport and the sponsors to know that Alex Bowman's not this young gun trying to make a name for himself, got a hot head, and going to go out there and tear it apart. That he is going to be a top 10, top 6 driver, that he's going to take care of his car, he's going to be there at the end. I don't think there's really any cons. I mean, other than maybe Alex Bowman doesn't have a household name that is going to slap every sponsor in underneath the sun on the car right now, I don't think there's going to be an issue finding a sponsor. And it was an issue that those sponsors would have pulled out last year when he was driving the car last year. There would have been issues. I don't think there's going to be an issue. I think there's only pros about having Alex Bowman behind that wheel.
Okay. So, and here's my take. The pros of this, he's got Jimmy Johnson, the seven-time champion, Jimmy Johnson. He's going to be in the same shop as Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson likes Alex Bowman. This could be a great relationship. And I'm going to remind you guys, Hendrick found Jimmy Johnson. Hendrick also found Jeff Gordon. Technically, he signed him to a deal real quick when he knew that he was going to be the next superstar. And he also found Tim Richmond. So it's not like Rick Hendrick can't scout talent, okay? So those that want to say, well, his sponsor is the reason why Alex Bowman's behind the wheel, it's Junior the reason why he's behind the wheel, it's also Hendrick the reason why he signed Alex Bowman. The cons, of course, like what Craig Moore just said about the lack of experience, I think the cons are going to be more based off of how much weight does he put on his shoulder, knowing that, for one, this is a one-year deal, and two, that he is the replacement of Dale Jr. Those two could be major factors in how he's able to perform. I believe that he has the talent and he has the sturdiness and the patience to be a good race car driver. But he's also on an hourly time glass, which means sometime around July, which is mid-season, he's going to be wondering if he is good enough to get the big deal. And that's going to put a lot of added pressure on top of the pressure that he is the replacement of Dale Earnhardt Jr. Will he prevail? Only time will tell. But I believe with him positioned at the understudy of Jimmy Johnson in the same shop as Chad Knaus, Alex Bowman's in pretty good hands, guys. And we might make Alex – we might see Alex Bowman become a household name pretty quick like Jimmy Johnson did. Remember, guys, Jimmy Johnson won a championship in his third season. He finished in the top five his first two seasons. So that's a lot of pressure coming from Alex Bowman. But if Hendrick's got his cars right, and then, of course, the money's there, we could see the beginning of a great new talent and one that could be positioning himself to take the head captain seat there at Hendrick Motorsports. Of course, everybody wants to crown Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott's got to crown himself before we can all, before the rest of us can jump on the bandwagon. Hendrick has brought in Casey Kane. Casey Kane was going to be a great driver there. Dale Jr. was going to win championships. Jimmy Johnson, nobody knew him. He showed up. Well, he kicked ass. He became a seven-time champion, maybe working on his eight this year, but probably will be an eight-time champion before he retires, and also considered the greatest of all time.
Where Alex Bowman, to me, has an advantage when we talk about what Jimmy Johnson accomplished by year three and what he did in year two, is Alex Bowman has already established this chemistry with the crew chief, this chemistry with the team, this chemistry with this pit guy already. This is going into his sixth season, the full season. There's already going to be that chemistry. So he's already kind of already, wheel spinning and already ahead of most of the other drivers that come in and go into their first season. And that was another big thing that I liked about Alex Bowman being that choice, is the fact that they are already comfortable with each other. They've already worked with each other. They've already worked with the spotters. They already worked with the crew chief. Alex Bowman's worked with everybody. So this, to me, was just kind of a simple, let's just put him back into this. There's already a chemistry, and let's see what happens.
Good point, Craig. You got anything to take on that?
You had commented about Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott also had a big set of shoes to fill. He was filling the 24 of Jeff Gordon. And that's more iconic. And I'm a huge Dale Jr. fan. But in my eyes, filling the 24 is more iconic than filling the 88. So.
I don't know about that. I really have to argue with that because the better driver at Hendrick Motorsports is Jimmy Johnson. The more popular driver amongst the all three of them is Dale Jr. Jeff Gordon really was only the highlight of racing for about 3 years before the next young guns come in. I mean, we celebrate four championships for Jeff Gordon, but who can remember any of those championships? Everybody remembers Jimmy Johnson's championships.
The only reason we remember Jimmy Johnson is because he did almost all those back-to-back-to-back. If it would have been spread out, it wouldn't be such a big deal. We wouldn't remember him. But the fact that he did five or six in a row, that kind of is what makes Jimmy Johnson stick out. And I'm not disputing. I mean, Jimmy Johnson obviously had a better career than Jeff Gordon. But also agree with Greg. I think going into the 24 car, also with your last name being Elliott, it is a bigger shoe to fill than Alex Bowman jumping into the 88 car.
I don't really agree with that, guys. We can agree to disagree. I believe that Chase Elliott was anointed at 15 years old with a ride that he was guaranteed. Has he come from a racing family? Bill Elliott was the most popular driver before Dale Jr. was. Chase may have had, I've got to live up to my father's expectations more so than he had to live up to being in the 24. because you know, you're talking about a kid whose dad was a Winston Cup champion. You know, I'm sure that Jeff Gordon had some kind of factor in Chase, you know, in his development when he was at Hendrick Motorsports. But Chase Elliott, since he was 10 years old, knew that he was going to go race NASCAR, and since he was 15, knew that he was going to go race NASCAR with Mr. Hendrick. Alex Bowman, on the other hand, guys, you're not talking about a kid who grew up at the racetrack. This kid has had to work for every bit of what he's got. And so maybe you're right. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the pressure is more on Chase because people have that expectation there. Bowman mm-hmm. may not be as under as much pressure within himself because all of this is just a great opportunity for him. It seems like we want Chase Elliott to win, and Ryan Blaney's won before him. Name the guys. Austin Dillon's won before him. Ricky Stenhouse has won before him. So, you know, Chase has had a couple of second-place finishes, but these guys are winning before him. And, you know, if Chase was all that, I can remember rookies coming in and winning. Dale Jr., Matt Kenseth, they won their rookie season. Tony Stewart won his rookie season. Joey Logano won his rookie season. We're talking about year number three with Chase Elliott and still no championship, no win.
You got the point. I can't argue with you. But you're right.
I mean, are we going to give Alex Bowman 3 years to come out of the closet? I mean, really? I mean,
I don't think it'll take that long.
I don't either. I really don't.
I don't either.
Go ahead.
I think by the time we get to the All-Star race, he's going to have a win.
Okay.
I really do. I think by the time we get to the All-Star race, he's going to have a win under his belt. And you're going to hear Darrell Waltrip go, I knew he had it in him. I knew it. I can't really do it, Darrell.
Look at
really
Greg Moore. We're rubbing off on him, Mr. CJ Sports. Now we're doing the impersonations by Greg Moore. He's the next Frank Calinato.
I mean, you know, I look at it as, and again, we can agree to disagree, and Mr. Sport, Mr. CJ, you'll agree with me. The 24 is a more iconic number because the same driver has been in it for the last 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, before him, his last name was Gordon too. Buddy Gordon, was that the former driver of the 24 before Jeff Gordon? He definitely made the 24 what it is. If you go back and look at the iconic drivers that have driven the 88, Alex Bowman has set himself with a lot of great names. We're talking about Darrell Waltrip, Bobby Allison. We're talking about Dale Jarrett. We're talking about Dale Jr. The list goes on who's piloted that 88 car. Ricky Rudd, Ernie Irvin sat some time in the 88. When it was first established with Robert Yates Racing. So, you know, Alex Bowman is on that list of, well, he's got to make a name for himself. But all these other drivers in the 88 car, I think if we're going to go by numbers, the 88's probably a little bit more iconic than the 24. Can I get an agreement in anybody at this table?
No.
No. I think the silence was golden.
The Zygarde team, Darrell Waltrip and Bobby Allison. We're talking about Dale Jarrett, who won the 2000 championship. I mean, where am I missing this? So what if Jeff Gordon had 18 years and less than 100 wins and 4 championships? Like I said, who can remember any of those championships? He won championships because the man, he didn't win anymore after. Well, neither did. Oh my goodness gracious! Y'all have got me frustrated.
When you make your list of all time drivers, Chris, did any of those drivers you just listed in the 88 car, you put them maybe outside of Bobby Allison, maybe you put any of them above Jeff Gordon when you create your list from who you think the best is
Darrell
all the way down?
Of course he's above. Of course he's above Jeff Gordon. Do you think that Darrell Waltrip is not as good of a driver as Jeff Gordon? Are you serious? He's even a better announcer. And we know that his broadcasting.
I don't know about that. Oh, my God. I'm so ready for DW to retire.
I think that's happening. I think that's happening sooner than later, as a matter of
it
fact.
Is, I don't know. I'd rather do Gordon McFarland.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let's get this perfectly clear. What we're going to argue about now is who had a better career, Darrell Waltrip or Jeff Gordon? I would say Darrell Waltrip had a better career.
I'd say you're on some serious drugs down there in Meridian, Mississippi, but that's just my opinion.
Well, it's not Maybelline.
If I had to create a list of all-time greats, I'm sorry, but Gordon would go above Dale Walker.
I don't know about that. And Bobby Allison, too. I mean, Bobby Allison had 80 wins. Darrell Waltrip had 80 wins. I mean, I just don't see how. I mean, they're almost all together in the most wins list. And I understand that Gordon had a few more championships, but Gordon stayed with the same team. Do you realize how many championships Darrell Waltrip would have won had he just stayed with Junior Johnson, or had he just stayed with Rick Hendrick? No. Darrell had to move every 3 years. Darrell had to go somewhere else because Darrell was Jaws, and he talked his way out of every job he ever had, except for the broadcasting job. Imagine that. So if Darrell would have stayed at Junior Johnson, you would have seen a 4- or 5-time champion. If he had somewhere in the middle of that left and went to Hendrick and stayed with Hendrick instead of thinking that he could form his own team and be competitive, he would have had another championship or two. We're looking at Darrell Waltrip, you know, he would have had probably 2 to 3 more championships than what he had if he had just stayed in one place, similar to what Gordon did. I mean, I just don't see it, guys. I don't know if y'all didn't watch NASCAR when you were growing up, but Bobby Allison and Darrell Waltrip both were a lot more bigger names than Jeff Gordon would ever be. Now, mainstream popularity says Jeff Gordon was more popular, but when it comes down to straight driving skills, yeah, I'm not going to put anybody above Bobby Allison because I think he is the best there ever was, and DW was really right up there with him. So that's just the different eras. And, of course, I'm kind of young. I'm 36, so I don't know what you guys were doing when y'all were about 10 or 11 years old.
What?
Darrell Waltrip won the Daytona 500 in, what, 1990? 91? It was his 17th year in Cup when he finally won his Daytona 500. It was 1989, sorry. He did the Iggy in 1989. So, I was 9 years old, guys. I don't know. I think the era where you had to race Dale Earnhardt to win, I think that was probably a stronger era than any era since racing, because you basically have had one guy win 100 races in the last 15 years. Before that, you had one guy to win 100 races in 15 years. Not even 100 races, but in Darrell Waltrip's era, you had 3 or 4 guys that, I mean, he was not just, Darrell Waltrip wasn't just battling Dale Earnhardt. He was battling Bobby Allison, Cale Yarbrough, David Pearson. I mean, come on, guys, seriously. We're talking about drivers now that win maybe 20 races in a career. Back then, there was 5 to 6 guys who were going to win that weekend. And it was a list, and it was really easy. It was either going to be Cale, it was going to be the Silver Fox, David Pearson. It was going to be Petty. I mean, we're even talking about outside the Petty years. Petty didn't really win after 1980. So, you know, he was kind of struggling. But during that time, I mean, these guys were facing the best of the best. I don't see why we give so much credit to Jeff Gordon, because who did he really beat?
He beat Senior?
Yeah.
Where my biggest argument is, you cannot name
another name that Jeff Gordon beat besides Dale Sr. You said it yourself, Dale Sr. You know what? Bobby Allison had to outrun Dale Sr., Darrell Waltrip, Cale Yarbrough, David Pearson, and a whole line of other guys that was after the same thing, and that was a checker flag. But you had to go to those guys, and then you still had guys like Tim Richmond, who come onto the scene and put a fire out. You had Rusty Wallace who showed up and showed out.
Get ready to say, does that mean that Rusty Wallace now is in the top 5 because he had a race against him and won a championship as well?
Well, Rusty didn't win a championship after Jeff Gordon. Rusty won a championship, so you're telling me that Rusty – but once again, we're saying Jeff Gordon had to outrun Rusty Wallace. Does Rusty go up in that top 3 of the names that I just named? Bobby Allison,
Cale Yarbrough. Rusty had a race against them. Does that make Rusty one of the all-time greats since he had to beat all their drivers to win the races he won?
You could probably put Rusty in my top 15. I wouldn't say so much my top 10 because when I start adding them up. But Rusty would definitely make my top 15 just because he – I mean, the man won like 45 races on short tracks, okay? Rusty never won him a plate race. Most of his wins were on short tracks, and he was very impressive when you got him in a place like Richmond, Martinsville, or Bristol. As a matter of fact, that Black Deuce, Miller High Life, Miller Genuine Draft, Blue Black Shadow – it was hard to beat him when he showed up at a racetrack at a half mile racetrack, and yeah, he showed Dale Earnhardt quite a few times that he was going to be a force to be reckoned with. It's probably a never ending subject. I think we give a lot of more credit to the guys these days than the guys back in the old day who really had to race a race car and not drive a Cadillac to work. So
next season, I'm glad that we got it all out.
What is that in the background?
That was me logging on to NASCAR.com.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I'll turn the subject over to you guys real quick and let y'all, because I feel like I'm being too argumentative. So let me take a sip of tea and see what you guys have to say about this.
Let me throw this out, Nick Craig. Let me throw this out real quick, Craig, and then you can take over. My biggest argument with it is, though, the competition, the quality of the cars are different. Back in the day, if you had the money, you had better cars. NASCAR today, to me, now I might be wrong, I feel the cars are more on an even level, and now it's more on the drivers versus back in the day, if your name was Eddie Earnhardt, you had the money, you could have the better quality car. That's just my opinion. I think that's why I hold a little bit more weight on what Ford did, maybe versus Darrell Waltrip or some of the other drivers. It is more of, I feel that the level of the playing field has evened out a little bit more. Now it's more on the driver.
Yeah, I think it's more on the driver to prove that they have what it takes.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing longer careers out of these guys than what you've seen back in the old day. I think that basically, you know, you were given, like, Bobby Hillen Jr., he was supposed to be the next superstar. Buckshot Jones was supposed to be the next superstar. Those guys were in and out pretty quick, where guys like Dave Blaney made a career out of sticking around in NASCAR. Jeremy Mayfield made a career out of sticking around in NASCAR. Another great example.
Jeremy Mayfield made a career out of overdosing.
Yeah, we always got to bring up the same subjects every time when we pull a name out of the hat. But, what I'm saying is back then, cars, you look at the list of drivers June Dunleavy had in his cars, and that was the amount of talent that was coming through the system. And basically every two or three years it was a different driver. Hutch Strickland, you know, was probably given 8 or 9 years. Chad Little was only given like 6 or 7 years. So these guys were put into the spot, and then they were kicked right back out. It's hard to believe, but Jeb Burton has already been in Cup Series for 6 years now. You know, he just catches a ride every now and then. So, you know, some of these guys have been around, and they're adding up the years of being in the Cup Series, and no real talent there at all. They're just taking up a space because they don't want to bring in anybody new. Am I in the right area, guys?
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I think there's the owners. It's kind of like when you're getting ready to, if you've ever been a boss and you got to fire somebody, you're kind of hesitant because you don't want to have to train somebody.
Right.
And you don't want to have to go through the learning curves with them.
Right.
We've got.
And of course, we had Wally Dahlen back, Robert Presley, and Randy LaJoy all pilot the future champion Bobby Labonte's car before he got into when he was racing the 22 for Bill Davis before he went to the 18. You know, all those drivers went through that seat and were out of racing. Bobby Labonte gets into the 22, has a decent year, gets sent over to the 18. You know, 4 or 5 years later, he's a Cup champion. So, you know, but all the people that had gone through those Scott Wimmer, you know, we could name a lot of names of guys that just didn't stick around very long. We never got a true evaluation of their talents. I think that that's changed these days, just as Craig said. Nowadays, they give guys a little bit more time. If you've got Cup experience, you've got something that many folks don't have, so they would rather have you in the car than somebody new. Is that kind of what you were saying, Craig?
Yeah, you kind of don't want to have to train. You kind of don't want to have to train anybody. I mean, you know, Dana keeps saying when I hit 50, she's going to turn me up for 25-year-olds. But she goes, but then I got to retrain them. You know? Listen,
over the bow.
What's that?
That's his shot over the bow, another Danica joke.
Yep. Let's talk silly season. We know what's going on. We know what's going on with the 88 now. Bowman, as we said, and we're not going to rehash that.
Kenseth, he's the next in line. Where does Kenseth go?
Kenseth, I'm going to say, and I'm going to stick with this. I'm going to stick with the fact, and I'm going to agree with whoever wrote this article, Brad Norman, on NASCAR.com. I thought it was a logical choice once it was mentioned that Jones was taking over the 20. I think it's a logical choice that Kenseth go and take the 77. He's still in Joe Gibbs Racing. He's still going to get decent equipment. He's not going to get equipment like Truex, but he's still going to get decent equipment, and he's still going to be in the Gibbs organization. I don't see him going. Excuse me, I don't see him going to another organization. He's 44 years old. He is in the twilight of his career. Let's be honest, he's in his 40s. He's in the twilight of his career. For him to go, nobody's going to give him a long-term sponsorship deal. I mean, it would be foolish. Maybe a 2-year deal, but nothing more than that.
Yeah,
Chris.
I think that the bridge is burnt at JGR, and he knows that it's burnt, and he's not going to go to the 77 car. And there's the question mark of who will go in the 77. I believe
Chris,
that Casey Kane would be a good option. I don't know if Matt Kenseth is a great option because, like I said, I think his pretty much jab at Joe Gibbs Racing was the living proof that he was no longer going to be associated not just with Gibbs, but Toyota Racing, period.
Chris, are you still with the feeling or the inside rumor that you feel that Carl Edwards is going to make a return with Front Row Motorsports?
You know, that was something at the beginning of the year I was really looking hard into. And the reason why I mentioned that was because Front Row Motorsports leased out one of their charters and didn't outright sell it. They leased it out to, I believe, Chris Buescher. In return, they have to take that charter and use it this year or sell it outright. I think that maybe certain things were put in place, but I'll be honest with you guys now, since it's been 3 or 4 months, and there's really not been much hot topic about Carl Edwards, I'm going to stun everybody by changing my theory and saying, guess what, guys? Carl Edwards is retired, and he's not coming back.
I think that
would have been a perfect scenario for Carl to come back, and if he did, then, of course, you would see Matt Kenseth follow over there because, of course, two rivals become two friends.
Well, they both were at Jack Ross Race at one point in time. What better way for you two poor guys to reunite and become part owners of an organization, get the first car going, and then go from there at that point? That was kind of where I was kind of getting at, if there's even a possibility. There's no doubt in my mind that Matt Kenseth knows what he's doing next year. Regardless of what he says, you can't convince me we are at the end of July and he has no idea that, one, this decision was going to be made, and two, what he's doing next year. I just think there's a lot of hush-hush going on, and I wouldn't be surprised if both of those end up somewhere together in some kind of form or fashion.
And you might see Front Row move that pendulum very quickly to get that done. Whether or not Carl Edwards could be a part of that, I'm not sure. But I believe that Ford has made a lot of investments into Front Row Motorsports. They've not only has the team been with Ford for quite a while now, But, you know, David Reagan's back there. David Reagan's a longtime Ford driver.
Former chap.
Landon Castle, who was once a Chevy prodigy child, a former Hendrick protege. It's definitely a possibility. Now, what I would be looking at if I was Kenseth is, has this team proved that it's capable of winning week in, week out? And at this point in time, I think that I would have to give that a C-minus to a D of Kenseth actually going to Front Row Motorsports. Now,
but you add,
in the Carl Edwards scenario,
yes.
And you add in a financial ownership into a team, I think that Matt Kenseth would be crazy not to go to a Front Row Motorsports because obviously they would have the right sponsorship to make those cars fast, and just like Stuart Haas, give it a year or two and they would be a force to reckon with, if not even from the door, based off of what Stuart Haas has done this year.
I agree with you on if they're going to give him an ownership role, like you said, Chris, he'd be dumb not to do it.
Well, then, and Ford has already offered Edwards the mountain once before. He had financial ties into Ford Motor Company before his departure from Roush Racing. As a matter of fact, if you'll remember, a few years beforehand, Edwards had dibbed in free agency a little bit before making the decision to stay with Roush Racing.
Yep. Well, let's move on to another hot topic. Post-race penalties. The same penalties over and over and over we're seeing, where they're getting less, but they're just as frequent. Lug nut violations. I mean, when are these guys, we talked about this last week, with should there be stiffer penalties? Scott Graves, $10,000. For lug nuts not being tightened. Tony Gibson, $10,000. That's $20,000 NASCAR made this weekend on a lug nut not being tightened. I think they ought to revisit this rule for 2018. Excuse me, and make this violation, this fine, a lot more money. $10,000 in their aspect of it isn't a lot of money, obviously. They weren't worried about it.
Well, Chad Johnston got fined $75,000, guys, on a $200,000 salary. So I talked to somebody this week, and they said, look, NASCAR is closer than ever than to closing the gap on these guys fighting for the gray area. And he said the next penalty that's going to come out, if NASCAR really wants to nip this in the bud, is allowing the cars to reassess their tech once the start of the race starts. So, in other words, they will be parked until the green flag drops, and then they will have to go through tech. By the time they get their car out on the track, they're going to be 20 to 25 laps down. You got a guy chasing for a championship one time that happens, and it'll never happen again.
Absolutely. And it's about time the suits down in Daytona figured this out. These guys don't mind paying $10,000 and $20,000 and $75,000, obviously, because they keep doing it.
Well, it's the team owners that are paying the fines as well. I found that out. For the most part, on these major operative teams, it's actually the team bank account that the fines come out of, not the driver. So, but I guess if you're like Carl Long and you don't have the luxury of running for a big team, it will be up to that person to pay that fine, which is the reason why smaller budget teams refuse to cheat and bigger teams are still cheating. So, I mean, either way you look at it, NASCAR has got to not pull their finger off the button just yet. Keep strolling like you're doing, but assess the penalty. Give them a couple of warnings. If it continues like the 42 car has, then eventually you make them go through. Because in dirt track racing, guys, you don't hit the track if you don't pass pre-tech. So I have these guys can skip pre-qualifying Tech and then still be able to start the race with the same illegal car that wouldn't pass Tech, I don't get it, guys. And I'm also pretty tired of the end of the races being that they're junking their chassis to keep from getting caught from whatever transformer parts that they have on these cars. We all know Denny Hamlin tore that thing down for one reason, because he wanted to make sure that he passed Tech when he went through it. So, guys, it's not just one thing that the team's doing. It's all the big teams, and that's what's separating them from the rest of the field, because they can afford the penalties, they can afford the technology. And until NASCAR ups the ante, you're going to have that separation between the field of cars that can afford and the field of cars that cannot.
Now, I will tell you this. You had talked to your sources about something. You and I had touched base. We had talked last week. We were talking about Richard Petty Motorsports and Eric Almirola coming back possibly, or Bubba Wallace going in it. I reached out to my source at Smithfield, and he said that he doesn't know where the talks are, and pretty much no